is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
And joining me right now on the HRNP guest hotline, a man who hosts the Around the NFL podcast, which I believe to be the best NFL podcast on the internet, I think, in the last decade as well. And the guy who also you can catch on the NFL Network, the one and only Greg Rosenthal. Greg, it's good to hear from you. We wanted to have you on earlier this year. The problem has been that there is a general dislike of the NFL in Houston because of the Houston Texans' performance this year, last year, and honestly, Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby, Deshaun Watson. I don't know. We could go on for a while on that front.
Yeah, it's sad, too, because Houston has such good fans. I don't think people around the country think of Houston immediately when you think of great football towns, but I always do because that stadium was always packed out no matter what the Texans were doing, but they have really tried their best to scare away fans the last 3 years.
I'm not sure what they can do next. There are some somewhat similar vibes to where we were last season at the end of David Culley. David Culley's Texans did play well against the Tennessee Titans towards the end of the year, the eventual AFC 1 seed. They did beat the Los Angeles Chargers. The last 2 weeks, you've seen the Texans, I guess, cover the spread. I know that there was a report that came out from Adam Schefter earlier this week where the NFL sent a memo out to all teams showing how much money they are spending on coaches who are no longer with the team, front office members who are no longer with the team. And long way of asking, can the Texans fire Lovie Smith after this season? Optics-wise, I suppose things can't possibly get any worse, but if they fire another African-American head coach after just one season, I feel like they are once again going to get absolutely ragdolled by the national NFL cognoscenti.
Yeah, they will, but we've seen owners can do whatever they want. We've seen it in Houston on some level, but we've seen it much more dramatically in places like Washington, Dallas in different ways. I think if they want to fire Lovie Smith, they will. They won't worry about the money. I mean, that money is relatively small compared to when you sign, let's say, like a bad defensive end free agent that doesn't work out. So I don't think it's a money thing. I do think it's embarrassing for the franchise. And I do think you have to question Nick Caserio's future, too, if only because he will literally be the first GM in NFL history to get to hire three head coaches in 3 years with absolutely no record of success. So if you want to say it doesn't make sense to start all over in the front office, like I could hear that argument, but what they're letting Caserio do, which is completely swing and miss on his first two head coaches, is literally unprecedented in the league. I went looking for it. Never happened before.
Well, that's bad. So, hey, can't only go up from here. Goodness.
They are
gracious.
Playing better. I think they might win this week. I'm picking the Texans this week. I have not picked them once in 15 weeks, and I am breaking that streak in the 16th week against who I expected to be Malik Willis in Tennessee.
Are you going to lock him up?
No, I'm definitely not doing that. I'm not feeling too good even picking them, because I'm competitive, but I really do think they're playing better football than the Titans, who are just falling apart.
Greg, that game I watched between the Texans and Titans earlier this year, where Malik Willis was under center for Tennessee and Davis Mills was struggling, I actually got up and just walked around the stadium just forlorn for about a quarter. And I figured, okay, I'll miss something. And I got back and nothing had actually happened in the game. That was one of the worst moments of covering NFL football that I feel like I've had. But to bring it back to going forward, you mentioned Nick Caserio. I really wonder what they're supposed to do with that first overall pick. I know a lot of people are pointing to Bryce Young or a quarterback. And, you know, one of the tricky things where you're an organization that has lost as much collective interest as the Texans have over the last couple of years, and you don't really have anything even to get excited about. I can understand why they might draft the best quarterback, at least per the eyes of many, just for the fact that they would like to have some people get excited about the team next year. And there's a part of me that's wondering if that's something that they should do say Bryce Young doesn't work out. Smaller guy, smaller frame, even if he has looked really good at Alabama. I know we always get the conversation about, like, hey, you got to take the best guy on your draft board. I really wonder about the idea of taking a quarterback with that first overall pick.
I don't, because you just don't know when you're going to be in this situation. The Texans were telling all their friends in the media, it wasn't really too hard to figure it out, that they thought they'd be a lot better than this year. I think before the season, they thought they were going to win 7 or 8 games this year. I kind of bought in that they would win 6 or something like that. So you don't know when you're going to be here again, and I'm of the mind you should take a quarterback every year. I liked what the Patriots did when they had Tom Brady and took a lot of second and third round quarterbacks, even though they had Tom Brady, because quarterbacks are worth that much. I think it's why Davis Mills was a good pick at the top of the third round. He's going to end up being a good long-term backup. But I think you're at the number one spot. There's two good candidates to take it. I wouldn't, no matter who's the GM, no matter who's the coach, I wouldn't think too hard about it. I do think you take a quarterback for that. Even if it's a 50-50 chance he's a true franchise guy, I mean, that is more than worth it.
I would like that, especially so what I have resorted to doing when the Texans are on the road, Greg, is I'm putting the NFL Red Zone on the big TV that I have in my room, and on the smaller TV I'm putting the Texans game on. And I remember on Sunday, a couple of weeks ago, in the Texans-Cowboys game, looking up, and I'm like, wait, why is Jeff Driskel in the game? I don't know what's going on. I turned the audio back on, and I think that broadcast was trying to figure out why Jeff Driskel was in the game. And then Davis Mills was lined up at wide receiver. Yeah, I'll take any quarterback over this two-quarterback tandem bicycle that the Texans have been rolling out.
Although, you know what? It's kind of worked with Driskel. And you know, Mills is fine. I thought maybe he could be better than he's been this year. But he's an NFL quarterback, and like honestly, a 10-year career as a quality backup, which I think is his baseline, is better than most third-round quarterbacks. But yeah, they've seen enough of him as a potential starter, and yeah, get the fans excited about something. I feel bad for them.
Thank you. We're having a hard time here, but let's take a look at the rest of the AFC South. Greg Rosenthal of the NFL Network, the Around the NFL podcast. The Jaguars seem to be on a roll to the point where they could maybe overtake Tennessee in the AFC South. Things are definitely looking up for them. I'm intrigued by Tennessee and Indianapolis right now, though. What's going on with Indy with Jeff Saturday stepping in is definitely different. That's for sure. But what seems to be happening with Tennessee right now, a complete collapse, does have me wondering long-term about the future of the team. I think Vrabel is going to stay, but do you think that Tennessee is going to be back in the cellar with Houston perhaps as soon as next year?
Wow. No, because they're never a team that's going to try to bottom out. They certainly have some contracts that they would like to get off their books, guys like Bud Dupree, Taylor Lewan, and so they'll refresh. But I don't think their drafts have been that bad if you look at their young players this year especially. I think they have a good coach. I think Tannehill's contract works for one more year. And so to me, they'll try as hard as they can to stay in the middle, and I don't see any huge reason why they wouldn't. I also don't know if Jacksonville is going to win this game here this week. I think almost however you shake it up, we're probably getting Jags-Titans week 18 to win the division, and that very well could be the Sunday night season finale, because the NBC likes it that way when it's like one in, one out as the last game.
I like that. That would be fun, because there will be a lot of people who will get very mad about that being the Sunday night game online. But I like AFC South National Football games. The Jets and the Jaguars, that's the game that's taking place tomorrow. So we will see what happens in that one, with Zach Wilson probably back out under center. Mike White was ruled out in that game. So we talked about Tennessee for just a moment. And what are your vibes on why they got rid of John Robinson? I know that when it happened, everyone was pretty surprised, and it seemed rather radio silent from the people that traditionally you expect to be in Camp Vrabel when it comes to reporting. You didn't get a whole lot of anything. And I looked at that moment in time, and we had been having conversations about, like, where would the Texans be right now? Say Mike Vrabel was still the head coach if they had decided to move on from Bill O'Brien all the way back in 2017. And now Vrabel, at least my read on it without having any inside information, is that this was a Vrabel coup d'etat. Is that something that you have heard, or is still everything radio silent on that front?
It's been radio silent, but that almost makes me feel even more that you have the right read on it, just because I think Vrabel respects John Robinson. They go back a long ways. He spoke about him publicly very glowingly and said it talked about talking to him. And I think it was just a business thing. I don't think there was more than anything to it, but I think Mike Vrabel wanted more control. I don't know if he has an idea of who in the front office he wants to be the head personnel guy. He probably does. It's just got to be a little more like a Pete Carroll, John Schneider situation, which can work. Pete Carroll's really not incredibly involved with personnel, but has his say. But he's certainly the guy who's in charge of the franchise, and I think that's what will happen in Tennessee. And, you know, they have a good reputation in terms of Amy Adams Strunk. Since he took over in Tennessee as a pretty clear-thinking executive and one of the better, I guess you could call it younger owners, newer owners in the league. So I'm actually bullish on the Titans long term. You can't go over 500 for five straight years without doing a lot right.
And that's why it's so surprising that they did move on from John Robinson. So we did mention the Jaguars, we mentioned the Titans. The Indianapolis Colts are going to have to look at other candidates due to the NFL's Rooney Rule, which does seem to be looked at very often as a joke by those who are in hiring roles, of course, across the league. Jeff Saturday, has he done, I think, anything that would make Indianapolis feel like he's not the guy next year? Because it does feel like they're just going to bring in coaches that fill out the criteria, if you will, this offseason. And I don't know that Saturday's done a particularly good job. I know what we saw from him against Minnesota on Saturday was a nice start, but that's the worst collapse in NFL history.
Yeah, I mean, he's kept them playing hard and competitive right up until the point they give up 33 points in a quarter or whatever it was back-to-back weeks. They did that against the Cowboys, too. I was thinking the same as you, Paul, like through three quarters of that game last week. I was like, oh, wow, Jeff Saturday's really going to keep this job. They'll probably win one more of their three games, something like that. He'll end up 3-4, 3-5. That'll be enough. I don't know. After that loss, if the next 3 weeks don't go well, I would kind of bet against him coming back next year. That's a tough one to wear. And there has been some kind of buzz around Indianapolis of Ursay talking to the reporters and saying that you have to, you know, look beyond the everyday candidates, kind of hinting at college especially. So my guess is Jim Irsay is as emotional as it gets, and he's emotionally gone through the ringer with two straight, you know, island games that have been embarrassing. He has another one coming up on Monday night. And I kind of guess he's going to change, and he's going to pick someone random and surprising probably from the college ranks, because he's Jim Irsay and he does surprising things.
Yeah, like sometimes hold press conferences from a golf cart while ripping a heater. Yeah, I would like some more of that, perhaps, for the next press conference that he introduces a head coach with. Greg Rosenthal, the Around the NFL podcast, and, of course, the NFL Network, at Greg with two G's Rosenthal on Twitter. Greg, thanks for your time. Let's check in again before the playoffs begin, and you have yourself a wonderful holidays, man.
Thanks, Paul. You too. See ya.
That is Greg Rosenthal, everybody. Love Greg. Love the Around the NFL podcast. You're not listening to that, I don't know what you're doing. It's fantastic. Fun look at football. That's the way it's supposed to be. Coming up next on the Paul Gallant Show, we're still taking a look at the Carlos Correa contract with the New York Mets. Are you at all envious of what the New York Mets are capable of doing? Do you think that this maybe changes Jim Crane's mind next offseason as far as how he operates with the Astros and his purse? Man purse? Man bag satchel? Going forward, Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.